We're in the middle of the Chinuch's discussion of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim relating the Exodus from Egypt, which is to take place on the 15th of Nisan, the first night of Pesach, at night. So, in the Midoraisa, there is not a very specific format for fulfilling this mitzvah, as long as you discuss certain aspects of this of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the relating to your children especially, but whoever might be there, the story of the Exodus from Egypt, you're Yotze. But the sages, they formulated a seder, literally an order, an elaborate structured meal that has a certain order to it that allows us to fulfill the mitzvah Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and they also instituted the mitzvah of Arba Kosos, of drinking four cups of wine during the course of this structured meal. Although Midaraisa, also we said, there's only a specific mitzvah to relate the Exodus of Egypt on the first night of Pesach, but it's sort of some sort of kiyum, it's some sort of fulfillment of this mitzvah, the fact that we say Zecher Letzias Mitzrayim, and we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim daily, meaning in the last paragraph of Kriyat Shema, where it ends off, Ani Hashem Elokechem Asher Hotzeiti Aschem Me'aretz Mitzrayim, I'm the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. So we really say, we mention the Exodus from Egypt twice a day. We also discuss it in the brachos of Kriyat Shema, that's considered some sort of kiyum of the mitzvah of relating the Exodus from Egypt. We mention it all the time in our prayer. So we were saying last time that part of the rabbinic enactment for the Seder on the first night of Pesach, and of course the second night also here in the diaspora, is the drinking of the four cups of wine. There's actually two aspects to the drinking of the four cups of wine. It's a famous Briskarov, he has an essay on this. There are really two aspects to the drinking of the four cups of wine. One is the basic requirement to imbibe the four cups, and one is the fact that each cup is a kos shel bracha of some sort, that there is a mitzvah that is recited over this cup of wine. The first cup is Kiddush, the second cup is the Haggadah, the third cup is benching, and the fourth cup is the Hallel. So not only do you have to drink the four cups, and there are different halachos and different concepts, different concepts governing the drinking of the four cups. Yes? There's also a famous Tosfos in the beginning of Arvei Pesachim, the parak of the Tractate Pesachim that discusses the mitzvahs of the Seder more explicitly, which says that technically not every single participant in the Seder is required to drink the four cups, but rather since Tosfos is working with that the main part of the four cups is that you recite certain parts of the service over the four cups. So he says technically the Baal Habayis, the person who's conducting the Seder, could just be motzi everyone in the four cups, just like he could be motzi everyone with Kiddush. So the other Rishonim did not like this at all. They assume that there's a specific requirement for everyone to actually drink four cups of wine at the Seder. It's part of Yontif, it's part of their Acherus, that we're showing that we are free now, we get to drink, we don't have to go to work tomorrow and be worried about a hangover. So everyone of course assumes that you have to actually drink the four cups of wine. Yeah.
So you're saying fine now, though.
Correct. Yeah, they're
kind of mitzvah entirely.
Right. You are certainly fulfilled the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. You just haven't fulfilled it in the most correct way that Chazal instituted, which is that it's supposed to be said over four cups of wine, but you're certainly fulfilled the mitzvah, absolutely. So the Sefer Chinuch mentions over here, mizigasan, that the four cups of wine have to be diluted. So the question is, when was the last time you saw anyone dilute his or her wine at the Seder? Well, maybe some people do, who can't take drinking so much straight wine. But the fact is that the requirement of miziga is based of mixing the wine with water is because in the times of Chazal, people didn't drink their wine straight. It used to be a much more everyday type of beverage that at least we here in America consider it. Maybe in France you'd think about it differently. but they used to dilute it, so it shouldn't have such a high alcohol content. It was also too strong a taste. Some say that the wine was more syrupy or stronger somehow. I'm not sure exactly how that was the case. It could have been more syrupy, more evaporated. In any case, they used to dilute it in the times of Chazal. So the question is, what the Chazal even talk about diluting the wine up to 3 parts water and 1 part wine. So then you get an alcohol content that's very low. You get an alcohol content of 3%, something like that. So it really shouldn't be difficult. It wasn't. In other words, people nowadays are thinking, you know, with the mitzvahs of the Seder, oh, it's so much wine, how can I take all that alcohol? And it's so much matzah, how can I? But the truth is that it was very reasonable over the course of an extended meal to drink four 3 ounce cups of 3% alcohol wine is really not very much at all. And furthermore, you don't even have to drink the whole cup. Your yotze, technically, if you drink most of the cup, so that's less than 2 ounces. That's like 1.5 ounces of wine. It's really, really not so much. There is a disagreement between the Rishonim. There's a famous, most Rishonim hold that the most you have to drink for you have to drink for the Arba Kozos most of a Revius. So no matter how big your cup is, all you have to drink is most of 2.6 ounces. Or however big you hold, however large you hold the Revius to be, you have to drink most of that. The Ramban, however, holds that you have to drink most of the cup, no matter how big the cup of your wine actually is. So we paskin like the other, that we really paskin like that, you all have to drink as most of the Revius for each cup, but it's more considered more correct to drink most of the cup according to the Ramban. However, the post can point out that even according to Ramban, he certainly doesn't hold they have to drink more than a whole Revius. That even if the cup, you have a gigantic cup and it holds 20 ounces, then still, according to Ramban, even lechatchila, you don't have to drink more than about 3 ounces, millilitres. Still, even also according to the other authorities, it's considered better to drink all the cup. So in any case, most lechatchila is to drink at least one whole Revius, because you certainly don't have to drink more than that. And so that's considered the best. And even so, it's not so much alcohol if you dilute it. So what do you do with wine nowadays where it's not normal to dilute wine? So in his Sefer Hilchos Shabbos B'Shabbos, Rav Moshe Mordechai Karp discusses how, for even just talking about Kiddush, for how much you can dilute our contemporary wine, and it's still to be considered wine. So he says that it's a disagreement between the poskim whether it's an absolute rule that Chazal instituted that you can have up to one quarter fresh, you know, wine, 100% wine, and 3/4 water, or it goes according to whatever is considered wine in that time and place. So he says that practically speaking, one should be stringent and not make bar priagofen or anything like that unless the mixture has at least 51% wine. Mm-hmm. So that would be the case for Arba Kozos today, that even if somebody who really has difficulty, I mean, certainly now that we have grape juice readily available, it shouldn't be a problem. But in this case of some emergency, one may dilute the wine somewhat, but shouldn't dilute it as much as it was in the times of Chazal.
It usually comes up on Avdallah. When you,
right.
You don't quite have.
You're finishing the bottle.
Yeah.
For Abdullah, if you have.
You don't open up another bottle for just Abdullah. Yeah.
Exactly. So if you have, if you're making Abdullah and you're finishing the wine and it fills up most of the cup and you just need to top it off with some water, that's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine. But considered nowadays, it would be considered if you're having Arba Kozos, again, I'm not sure. Let's say you have Arba Kozos from very nice, fancy wine, so it would not be considered so as chashuv to dilute the wine, so maybe probably more correct is not to dilute it at all. Of course, there's still yotze as long as it's only slightly diluted, certainly. But more in the spirit of yontif might be to drink the pure wine. Again, unless you're going to get drunk or something, which also is not good. It's okay on yontif. You know, we try to maybe get a little bit inebriated, but not certainly not so much that one loses control. One can be a little happy, a little extra happy, but it's not. One should not certainly not lose control under any circumstances either. And of course, one has the option either of using a small cup, which is the real size of the Revius, or diluting the wine a little bit, or not drinking the entire cup, just drinking a Revius, no matter how big a cup one has. So certainly there are many solutions available, and nobody should be getting sick or drunk or anything at the Seder. The Sefer HaChinuch is now going to give us a run-through of how the Seder works. And this is based on the opinions of the Rashba, which we pointed out in our first year, that the Sefer HaChinuch was most probably written by a student of the Rashba. So he follows the Rashba's opinion here when he presents the Seder, and not everything is according to our current practice nowadays. Betchila, mevi'in mayim, v'notlin yad achas. This is the first strange thing that should jump out to you. Oh, first he says, v'ino kosev lach b'ni, I'm writing you, my son, ha-seder b'ktara, the Seder in a very short way, kasher shemativ mipichach me'ador b'diyuk. I'm reporting exactly how I heard it from the sages of the generation. So it says, first thing, they bring water, and you wash one hand, bishvil kos kiddush, shetzrich in lethal. You have to wash your hand for making kiddush. V'hachisa bibrachos b'perek ketzad. Again, in the perek ketzad b'varchin and tractate brachos, it says that what happens when you walk into a meal is you wash one hand and you take the cup of wine. So for drinking wine, it's enough to have washing of one hand, because you only touch the cup of wine with one hand. You wouldn't use both hands. This washing of the hand does not get a bracha. It's the opinion of the Rashba, based on this passage in Maseches Brachos, that we generally have a principle that liquids more easily accept tumah, ritual impurity, than solids. That's why also, as of course we know this halacha from the Seder, that when you dip something in water, you have to wash your hands. Not all Ashkenazim have the minhag to follow this halacha, but Medina de Gemara, based on strict Talmudic law, one is required to wash one's hands before eating a food dipped in liquid, because just as we have to wash our hands before eating bread, so we should remain conscious of the rules of Tumah and Tara. So Chazal instituted for us a certain level of Tumah and Tara nowadays that we should not forget it. We should remember how the Kohanim used to eat their Truma by washing their hands first. So we wash our hands for bread. So too, since liquids accept ritual impurity much more readily than solids, so if one touches a liquid directly, certainly one is required to wash one's hands. So here too, the case might be that when you're drinking or something, you might not be so careful, and you might touch the liquid with your hand and render it impure. And while it doesn't strictly matter nowadays that the liquid's impure, who cares? But we want to remember, we want to keep in mind the rules for ritual purity and impurity, but it's enough to wash one hand, because it's assumed that you're only going to touch the wine, certainly, with only one hand, because that's what you use to drink.
Saying then that you know, actually you would wash one hand before you'd make kiddush.
Yes.
And then both hands before you'd, you know.
Correct.
You'd do the karpas. Okay.
Yep.
So an extra half washing.
An extra half washing. As we know, nobody does this. Most Rishonim don't agree with this. They say that there really was no halachic takona per se to wash one hand before drinking wine. But in any case, certainly at the Seder, since the first thing is making Kiddush, so you, according to the Rashba, you wash one hand. This would be the case even on Friday night also. Yeah, any Kiddush.
By the way, how does washing a hand do anything about tumah? Isn't tumah your whole body?
Right. So, mida oraisa, on a biblical level, there's no concept of your hands being impure and the rest of your body being pure. But the whole institution of impurity just on the hands is a rabbinic law. That's the way it works.
When you wake up.
I mean, the washing when waking up is not for purity and impurity per se. It's not like for washing before eating bread, where it's a remembrance to how the Kohanim used to eat their Shruma and they used to have to wash their hands first. Washing when you wake up is either because, is for a few reasons. A, it's because some sort of ruach ra, some sort of impurity, not in the Tumah and Tara sense, but of more metaphysical, I mean, tumatara is metaphysical, I guess, but a more esoteric sense that rests on the hands during the night. And also because there is a separate enactment that for the sake of honor for the tefillah, for the prayer service, you have to wash your hands before davening at all. So those are the two real reasons. Also because as a remembrance for the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to wash their hands and feet before performing the service. So too, those are the three reasons that are given for the washing of the hands when one wakes up in the morning. So he says, he says that you're allowed to wash both hands before the kosher kiddush. Of course you're allowed. You're allowed to wash your hands whenever you want. No, but the answer is, there's a statement in the Gemara that says that if you wash your hands in a ritual fashion before eating peiros, before eating fruit, then that's considered harizei migasei haruach. That's considered some sort of haughtiness. So, because it's not halachically required. So here the Rashba was saying, but you're allowed, if it's just your hands, you feel your hands are dirty, or there's no, but and then you're allowed to wash your hands before, and even in a ritual fashion, before making Kiddush. The Rishonim don't agree with that. They say one should specifically not wash one's hands in a ritual fashion when one is not required to do so because it appears of haughtiness. Of course, this is also one of the arguments involved in whether one washes one's hands first and then makes Kiddush, or makes Kiddush, I mean, just on a regular Friday night or Yontif night, or whether one makes Kiddush first and then washes one's hands. That some of the arguments of those who say you should wash afterwards are because that you're not supposed to wash before because it looks like haughtiness. Others say no, that you really just have in mind then to wash for the meal. And you're even, there's a halacha that states technically, though it's hard to do this, that you're allowed to wash your hands in the morning and masna alehem kol hayom, and you don't have to wash your hands again for the rest of the day as long as you keep track and make sure that your hands stay pure all day long. So this is clearly, there doesn't have to be, as long as one's very careful, there doesn't have to be an exact immediate washing before bread per se. So there certainly isn't worse than that, washing one's hands before Kiddush. Interestingly, the opinion of the Rashba was that one is permitted to wash, against most many Sephardi Rishonim, the Rashba held that one washes one's hands before Kiddush, and he reports that that was the customary practice in Spain, that they wash before Kiddush, just like they did in Germany and Western Europe in general, and also actually in Eastern Europe originally before the influence of the Taz and the Gra and other poskim. This was not just a Yekesh thing, it was a more widespread Jewish custom. Okay, so then it continues, V'achar kach mevarech al hayayin u'makadesh, then you say, on wine, you make Kiddush, V'eino mevarech al hayayin l'acharav. You don't make an after bracha on the wine, because it's all considered one unit, and as we'll see, he holds you don't make a bracha over the second cup, a separate bracha over the second cup of wine. So therefore, the bracha of Kiddush has to cover the second cup of wine also. So obviously, you're not allowed to make, you shouldn't make an after bracha, because that would be a hefsek between the first cup and the second cup. De'achar kach notel shtei yodav u'mevarech al netilas yodayim. After Kiddush, you wash both hands, and you make the bracha al netilas yadayim, because, as we said, according to basic Talmudic halacha, one is required to wash one's hands and make a bracha before eating of anything that's dipped in liquid. So before eating the karpas at the Seder, you have to make an actual halachic netilas yadayim, and you have to make a bracha for it. The minhag developed, because there's opinion, Tosis' opinion is that nowadays, although it's a lone opinion amongst the Rishonim, that one does not have to do this nowadays, wash one's hand before eating something dipped in liquid. Yet, for bracha purposes, we're concerned for the opinion of Tosis, and we wash our hands without making a bracha. But the Rashba was not concerned for the opinion of Tosis. He held that you may wash and make a bracha. No two bits about it. Umetabel beyerek. Then you take the vegetable, the green non-maror vegetable, mevarech alav bari pri ha'adama lefanav. You make the bracha of bari pri ha'adama, of course. Ulacharav einu mevarech bar nefashos. You don't make the after bracha on the karpas either. Lefi sheyamten ad sheyochal hamaror. You wait till the maror because the bracha, you don't make a separate a bracha on maror. The bar pri adam of the karpas is to cover maror. Vaz yivarech bar nefashos al maror val yerek. Then your bar nefashos on the maror covers the maror as well as the yerek. The whole Haggadah is not a hefsek for the bracha of Bar Pri Adama between the karpas and the maror. Now this is very strange. You eat the maror in the middle of the meal. It's after you washed already, so benching should cover that. But it's really l'shitaso. He holds that, just as he said, that the bracha of the matzah would not cover the maror. The maror is not considered really a part of the meal, so therefore you have to have in mind, which we try to do anyway nowadays also, when you eat the maror, I mean the karpas, you have to have in mind to cover the maror also. And not only that, but he holds so much so that he's so sure that maror is not a part of the meal, that's not even covered by benching. You have to make a separate borei nefashos on the maror and the karpas.
Does that mean that he holds one should have a kazayas of the karpas?
Probably, yeah. He doesn't state it explicitly, but my assumption is that that he would hold that you need a kazayas of karpas. That's the opinion of many Rishonim. That you do make a kazayas of karpas. The Rambam and others. So there's certainly the whole reason that we don't make a. Most people don't eat a kazayas of karpas is because you don't want to get into a safek bracha achrona, you don't make bari nefashos. But clearly, here he holds that you for sure don't make bari nefashos now, and you have to wait till later after you eat the maror. So certainly, there's no reason to refrain from eating. You have only what to lose and nothing to gain by not eating a kazayas of karpas. If it's one of the mitzvahs of the seder to do so, seemingly you should eat a kazayas of karpas. Whereas we're not sure in our contemporary system of Psak, which is based on the Maharami Rodenberg, he was one of the early ones to say that he would not eat a kazayas of, I believe he was one of those ones who said that who originated the practice of not eating a kazayas of karpas because he was nervous. He's not sure which bracha is the one that covers maror. Is it the bracha on the matzah, not like the Rashba and the Sefer Chinuch, or is it the bracha on the karpas? So then you get into all these ideas or tricks to get yourself as many opinions to fulfill as many opinions as possible. But if you're not into the tricks, so you don't, so you eat a kazayas of karpas and you're not worried. The Gra also only ate a kazayas of karpas, and the Bach. There's a strong tradition of even later authorities who did eat a kazayas of karpas. Okay, Ve'achar she'achlu min ha'yerek b'charoses. He also, interestingly, just like the Rambam, he holds that you dip the karpas not in salt water or vinegar, but you dip it in charoses. Whereas I believe Rabbeinu Tam or Tosfos in general hold that since charoses in the Mishnah, charoses isn't mentioned as brought out until the matzah and maror time. So you see, according to them, you see that you don't dip the karpas in charoses. You'd have to dip it in something else that requires you to wash your hands. It has to be something liquidy. So either salt water or vinegar. I think they originally say vinegar. The salt water comes later. And so vinegar, to tell you the truth, it makes much more sense. It's a normal salad dressing. The whole point of the karpas is you eat a salad before. It's like eating a little bit of salad before the meal as an appetizer. It's not just purely shtick, although it's supposed to be somewhat unusual. It was more normal to use vinegar than to use salt water as a dressing for a salad. So that's why my personal preference is to use vinegar for the dipping of the karpas. So certainly your yotze, it's not a matter of being yotze or not, just more correct is to use vinegar.
You also don't have to worry about mixing salt water in advance, et cetera.
Correct. You don't have to worry about preparing the salt water on Shabbos, or Yom Tov, whatever. But more of a problem on Shabbos. But according to the Chinuch and the Rambam, that all the dipping of Seder night is always in Charoses. There is no dipping in other things, so even though it didn't explicitly mention it yet, the presumption is that one dips even the Karpas in Charoses. Okay, so after V'achar Shachlu Min HaYerek B'Charoses Mozgin Kos Sheni, immediately after Karpas, you pour the second cup. I think some people wait to pour the second cup until a little bit later. In contemporary Ashkenazi rite, I think they wait maybe until after Manishtana, but seemingly the second cup should be poured right away, so the entire Haggadah should be recited over that over the second cup. Now he skips a lot. There are a lot of specific halachos about Magid, with a section that we call Magid, or saying the Haggadah, like the four questions, and of course the most important, the singing of Dayenu. And that was a joke. But he glosses all over that, and he says, the Korin Haggadah, you just say what's printed, although there's no printing, say what's written in your manuscript Haggadah, im shnei prakim min ha-halel. So you recite the Haggadah, including the first two chapters of the Halel. And then, v'notlin ha-yad achas, because you're about to drink the second cup, so you have to wash one hand again. Umivarech asher gyalanu. That bracha, of course, that's recited over the second cup. Asher golanu v'golas avoseinu mitzrayim al hakos hasheni v'shosin oso. You drink the second cup. Vein mevarchin alav bari pri hagefen. You don't make a separate bracha on the second cup of wine because the bracha of the kiddush cup covers this cup as well. So this is a major point of disagreement also amongst the Rishonim, that the Rambam also and the Gaonim, as followed by the Ashkenazi tradition, is that since each cup is a mitzvah in its own right, just sort of like Kiddush, so the Bor Pri HaGefen is an intrinsic part of Kiddush, because to give hashivas, to give importance to the drinking of the cup for a ritual purpose, so we make the bracha Bor Pri HaGefen for all four cups of wine. Whereas other Rishonim, the Rashba, held, and that's current Sfardi Minhag, as opposed to Ashkenazim and Teimanim, the current Sfardi Minhag is that you only make the bracha on the first cup, because that covers the second cup, and of course, benching is a hefsek, so you have to make a new bracha on the cup for benching, and then that covers the fourth cup as well.
So when
that one's not supposed to drink wine between the first cup and the second cup, but one may drink, of course, during the meal. It's just like any Yontif meal one. And it wasn't a burden to people nowadays have had enough with the four cups. They can't imagine drinking extra during the meal. But if you drink wine as a normal beverage, or it's not so alcoholic, though, so you're going to drink some during the meal also. It's part of Kviya Suda Al Hayayin on Shabbos and Yontif, independent of Kiddush, really. One is supposed to drink wine, ideally. It's not Ma'akev, but that's considered better. It's considered a good idea. The Rambam holds it's required to drink wine in the middle of the meal as well, during the course of the meal. So same might be true Seder night also. V'lo achra v'alagefen, you don't make an alagefen after the second cup, obviously to make a bracha before, because the bracha of, according to the Chinuch, the bracha that you made on the wine for Kiddush covers you all the way to benching. So it covers any wine in the middle of the meal, it covers the second cup, you're good. V'achar sheshasu kosheni, notlim liyadayim avarchim al netilas yadayim. After the second cup, you wash your hands with a bracha for the meal. The notlin chatzi matzah umanichen osal hashleima. You take half matzah. He doesn't, again, since he didn't give you any of the specifics of what goes on during the recitation of the Haggadah, you don't know how you got a half matzah. Or maybe he holds there's no actual splitting. You just use whatever half matzah you happen to have lying around. The Rambam doesn't hold that you split the matzah in its ritual place of yachatz that we have in our Haggadah, but you just, right before you make hamotzi, you rip the matzah in half. I say rip because he had soft matzah. You rip the matzah in half, and just to show that on Pesach we have lechem oni, we have a poor man's bread, so the Gemara says, ma darko shel oni beprusa. Just as a poor person can't necessarily afford a whole loaf of bread, he might eat pieces. So too, we show that here, since we have lechem oni, bread of affliction, that we are not going to revel in our having whole breads, so we have only half of one. So here, Chinuch just says you take half the matzah and you put it on the whole one. So there is one whole one, because just to show that there's sort of lechem mishnah, as a remembrance lechem mishnah, you have a whole one, but not two whole ones, you have one and a half. So our practice is not like this. This is the opinion of the Rif and the Rashba, apparently, and the Rambam, that you don't have three matzahs, and the Grop also passing like this, that you only have two matzahs. So the din of lechem oni, of bread of affliction, is mafkia. It undoes the normal din of lechem mishnah that you have on Shabbos and Yantav. They're supposed to have two whole breads. However, the Rosh, and this is the normal contemporary practice, is that the lechem oni doesn't undo it. It's just supposed to be an extra sign in addition to the two whole ones. So that's why the contemporary practice of most people is to have three matzahs, two whole and one broken. But there are people who still do it the other way, to have just one and a half. Probably some Yemenites. Or Moshe Feinstein also did only one and a half, following the minhag of the Vlozhin Yeshiva, according to the Vilna Gaon. Anyway, everyone follows their custom. There's a story about the Vilna Gaon. One of his travels, when he wasn't so well known yet, he traveled a lot. He caused himself to go into Golos. So he was wandering around Europe, and he was somewhere for Pesach, and he was a young man, and he was having the Seder with a family in some town in Europe, and he took only two matzahs, and he ripped one, or he broke one, and he had one and a half. So the Baal Bas, chutzpah, you think you can disagree with all our minhag to have a... They didn't know yet that he was the Vilna Gaon. And Taka did have the right to disagree if he wanted to. Anyway. Mevarchin ala chatzi hamotzi velechol matzah. So he doesn't say you have to hold both of them at the same time. He says that you just make the bracha of hamotzi and lechol matzah, not alachilas matzah, but lechol matzah, to eat matzah, which makes more sense because it's a bracha you do directly. So according to the... We don't always follow the rules of how brachas are supposed to be formulated. Al asiyas, on doing something or to do something, lechol matzah, but it seems to make more sense, lechol matzah. But our minhag is to say al achilas matzah. V'notlin chazeres, you take some lettuce, u'mevarchin lechol maror, make the bracha of lechol maror, even though it's not deraisa, it's only derabanan nowadays. Still, of course, you make a bracha just like any other rabbinic commandment, that you make a bracha. The ochlin mimenu betibul bacharoses. You dip it into charoses and you eat it. Ein mevarchin alei borei pri adama. Even it's certainly he holds. It's not even a question that it's not covered by the hamotzi of the meal. But you don't make borei pri adama in a while. If you should niftara bevracha sheberchu beyerek tchila. It's exempted by the bracha of the karpas. Tachi mituchach b'gemara, it's proven in the Gemara. Delo havi hafsaka la'olam shenitztarech lachzor levarech, that there's no such thing as a hefsek. There's no such thing as a hefsek that you would have to make a new bracha. Elim ken yesh badavar shnei anyanim. You need two conditions for there to be considered a real hefsek. Sheyakor ha'adam daito min ha'inyin, that one should set his mind off from the subject. So you finished eating and you say, bring me the cup for benching, the kosher benching, and such things. So you've shown that you completely don't have a mind to eat anymore. It should be impossible to do the two things together. It's like they say in Maseches Chulin, you cannot drink and make a bracha at the same time. So since you said, havlan v'nivrich, give me the cup and I'm going to bench, so since you can't drink and bench at the same time, so obviously you've shown that you no longer have an interest in doing what you've previously been doing, and it's impossible to do it, so therefore that's considered a real hefsek. But over here, the Haggadah is not considered a real hefsek because you didn't show any. You're still doing the same, or you're doing the seder the whole time. There's no specific showing that your intention is to stop doing the things of the seder. So that's why the reading of the Haggadah is not an inappropriate interruption between the bracha of karpas and the eating of the maror. After you dip the maror in charoses and eat it, korchin mimenu al gabe matzah ve'ochlin. Interesting. He says you wrap the matzah with lettuce, as opposed to the simple understanding, which seemingly is that you wrap the matzah around the maror. Maybe they had hard matzah. It's hard to imagine, but maybe. So in any case, some people nowadays are makbid not to. Since it's called kricha. Wrapping, so they're makbid not just to make a sandwich with the matzah and the maror, but rather they do wrap the lettuce. Rav Soloveitchik was makbid on this, that he would wrap the lettuce around the matzah because it's supposed to be wrapping. It's very literalistic practice, but still, why not? So he doesn't say anything also about dipping the sandwich in charoses. Although seemingly one should do that as well, because the Gemara seems to indicate that one, whenever one eats maror, one dips it in charoses. And certainly, if they used to, this is how, when matzah and maror were both there, right? So, and you could eat both at the same time. Nowadays, we can't eat both at the same time, because the maror is not required midaraisa, so you're not allowed, it's considered to nullify the mitzvah of matzah with the taste of maror. But when they're both deraisa, equally, of equal obligation to eat them, then you could eat them both together, and it's no problem. So certainly when people were only eating maror in that fashion, certainly they wrapped together with a matzah. So certainly they dipped it into charoses, so the kricha should be also dipped into charoses nowadays. There are different minhagim about this.
So this kricha, then, you know, zman hazeh, we should be worried to have a kazayas. Because it's completely, we're not, you know, why should there be a kazayas of matzah for it?
Because there should be a kazayas of matzah for the kricha, because it's a remembrance to what they used to do. So before they used to have at least.
But it's not part of your achilas matzah then.
It's not part of your achilas matzah. It's just the zecher. That's why even people who insist on a gigantic shear for eating the plain eating matzah, they will rely on the smaller shear. Of course, their smaller shear is also probably much larger than actually required. But they'll accept the smaller shear for the matzah for korich than they will for the plain eating of matzah. Because it's just a zecher. And so if you don't do it at all, you've fulfilled your obligation for matzah and maror. Nowadays is the only thing that we do as a remembrance to what they did in olden days. But you certainly fulfilled your obligation for eating a matzah and maror if you don't do this at all. V'achar kach ochlin su'dasan. Afterwards, you eat the festive meal. So there seem to be two minhagim in Klal Yisrael, and like we like extremes in Judaism, especially contemporary Judaism, so there seem to be two minhagim about the meal at the Seder. One minhag is that it consists just of, you know, a little bit of chicken soup, and then they serve a little piece of meat, and that's about it, because either it's late and everyone wants to finish the Seder, or they're not hungry because it's so late and they've already eaten so much matzah and maror, and that's the tam for that minhag. The other minhag is that's the most elaborate meal of the year. They serve tons and tons of side dishes and kugels and types of meats and salads and vegetables, and so every family is machzik in their minhag. But technically, more correct, I mean, seemingly, it should be more correct to have more of a festive meal. It's a regular yontif meal at the Seder, and if one eats normal portions of matzah, maror, and wine, and doesn't make oneself sick, so it should, there should be enough room for it to eat a somewhat normal meal, balanced meal that night. The problem also is that people spend so much time on Magid that people are sleeping by then, so they don't want to have a full meal then. So if you don't dray out Magid and you wait for all the kids to say their Divrei Torah, that they learned in school until after the meal when you, there's also a mitzvah to stay up as long as possible. The more you talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim on Seder night is considered the better. So if you wait to do all your arichos and you just do the basic mitzvah of talking about the Exodus from Egypt, if you just eat, you just read the Haggadah with basic explanations and commentaries, so it shouldn't be so late when you get to the meal. V'achar kach, after the meal, ochel kol echad ve'echad ma'at matzah. He does, again, he hasn't mentioned shiurim the whole time, but the shiur is a kezias. And after the meal, one eats a small amount of matzah, the what we call now the afikomen. Zecher la-pesach shahaya nechal al-hasova. So this is a remembrance to the Korban Pesach, which was the last thing that people would eat during their meal, and it's eaten when one is already basically satiated. It's not supposed to be that you're totally stuffed and you can barely force this matzah or barely force this Korban Pesach down. It's called achila gasa, and it's not, for Torah purposes, it's not usually considered to really be eating. So you eat your kezias of matzah in the end. Ve'ein ochlin od kol halayla shelo lesalik tam hamatzah min hapeh. So after that, you want to keep the taste in your mouth as long as possible, the you know, this wonderful mitzvah. In fact, eating matzah, there are some Rishonim who say that this is the ikar of eating matzah, that the matzah in the beginning is just so because you have to make hamotzi, and you make the achilas matzah then, because it would be a little ridiculous if you eat matzah the entire meal, and then for their last little bit, then you make achilas matzah. Acher, the Gemara has such a discussion by Marur, that if you use what you, the vegetable that you're yotzei for Marur, for karpas, then it's ridiculous to make the achilas Marur later. So then you, if that's the case, that the ikar matzah, that the ikar mitzvah is at the end, then that really means that you have the taste in your mouth of the real mitzvah for a long time. In fact, everyone points out that eating of the matzah on Leil Pesach is the only mitzvah d'oraisa to eat that we have nowadays at all. No, Erev Yom Kippur. At a certain level, yeah, but specific to eat a certain thing. We used to be, there'd be a lot of korbanos that people would have to eat, but matzah is the only thing nowadays that we have left, a specific d'oraisa mitzvah to eat something. So it's considered very important and very unusual.
First night of Sukkos?
First night of Sukkos is true, yes, but that's
the
right, that you have to eat in the sukkah, but it's not to eat a specific chefza. I mean, it's bread, because that's what that's the, you're supposed to have a suda, because it has to have gezer shava. You're right. Yeah, that's true. Sukkah is also. Sukkah is also. But it's not as specific, as specified as this. That's 100% right. First night of Sukkah. We want to have the taste in our mouths as much as possible. So we don't eat anything else after the matzah the entire night. Kedichsev midvash lipi, like honey to my mouth. So they want mitzvahs to be like very tasty. Aval mayim vaday shosin, you can drink water. Shein hamayim efigim hatam, because water does not prevent you from having the taste in your mouth. If you just rinse your mouth with water, it's not everything that you tasted is still going to be there. V'chein shosin gamkein trei kasei de mitzvah, you would drink the final two cups of the Seder night. Kilo nitche mitzvah mitamza, because you have to drink the last two cups. So just because of this inyan that you don't want to have anything in your mouth the rest of the night, does not take precedence over the real mitzvah of the two final cups of the Seder. So the question arises also: are you allowed to brush your teeth or use mouthwash or whatever at the end of the Seder? So. It's also a difference of opinion. If you, after all that matzah and wine, it's not so good necessarily to have it on your teeth. But I think Rabbi Willig said it's on my achrayus. Two nights a year you don't brush your teeth. Shomer p'soy Hashem, hopefully you won't get cavities from these two nights. V'achar kach. Nodlim lo yadayim, you wash mayim achronim, vein bevarchim al atiyos yadayim, you don't make the bracha, you never make a bracha on atiyos yadayim. Umozgin koshlishi, you prepare the third coast, umavarchin al berkes amazon, you bench on the third coast, ubari priagofen, avol lachor valagefen, you don't make an after bracha, because this bracha has to cover the fourth kos as well, because it's his shita that you don't make a bracha on the fourth kos. V'achar kach mozgin kos revi'i. After you've said the benching, you pour the fourth kos. The gomrim olav es halal. You continue reciting the halal until you finished the whole thing. V'ein mevarchin olav bari pri hagafen. You don't make the bracha, of course. Aval achra mevarchin al gefen. You make an after bracha just like we do, because that's the real end of all the drinking that night. So just like we make an after bracha after the fourth kos, you make an after bracha after the fourth. The schinich ochos also would hold you after. You make an after bracha after the fourth kos. Bushali yedaitem lishtos od kos chamishi. This, in the case, we don't have to drink we don't want to drink a fifth cup. There, the halacha does allow you the option of inserting a fifth cup if you're still thirsty or you want to. You may have a fifth cup of wine. You could split the halal into two. You could say you drink the fourth cup after you finish the regular halal, and then when you start all the kilol and chastos, that gets its own cup of wine. But normally we just stick to the four cups. There's a whole history behind this. I don't recall offhand, but there have been, I think recently, there was some scholarship published about the history of the fifth cup. I'll have to look into that. Nimtza lefize, she'ein mevarchin bari pri hagefen ela treis manei. We only make the bracha bari pri hagefen twice, al kos hakiddush ve'al kos habracha. On Kiddush and on benching. The al gefen pamachas, you only make the after bracha on wine once. Achar kola kosos, at the end when you finish drinking all the cups of wine of the Seder. The arba hakosos umatza de mitzvah tzrichin eseba. There is a requirement that for the four cups of wine and for the eating of matzah, although not for the other eating of the night, although the Rambam holds that it's even considered to be preferable that one recline for the entire duration of the Seder, basically. Still, according to this Awi Paskin, also that it's only a requirement to recline. It's because it used to be the derech, that the way that people, that important people would eat their meals, they wouldn't sit, only servants would sit around the table. It would, the important people, regular people, would recline on couches to eat their meals. They recline on their left side, which aids digestion, and they'd be able to eat with their right hand. It's very comfortable. Maybe we shouldn't reintroduce this. But in any case, there is an opinion, famously quoted from the Raviyah, that the Mishnah's requirement that one is supposed to recline during the mitzvahs of the Seder is not as a remembrance of the way that they used to eat, or way that free people used to eat in a reclining fashion, but the Mishnah is just telling you that these mitzvahs have to be eaten in a dignified fashion. So if the custom is no longer to eat in a reclining position, then it's not required at the Seder either. And this is the opinion that Ashkenazi women rely on, because there is the halacha says that women don't have to do a seba, but an important woman does have to do a seba. So we consider that all our women are important, obviously. So we have to, so they technically should have to recline at the Seder, but they rely on the Raviyah that even an important woman does not have to recline at the Seder. Also, we might rely on the Raviyah for certain other things. If you forget to recline under certain situations, although ideally one should do the mitzvah again, we certainly take the Raviyah's opinion seriously for certain things. What?
What is a Raviyah?
The Raviyah holds that you don't have to recline at the Seder nowadays. Who is he? Oh, the Raviyah is an early German Rishon. And, there might be other reasons also that women, the women nowadays don't recline, because that part of it has to do with conceptual analysis of that part of the Seder experience is not relevant for them, even though they're required to perform the Seder. But in any case, I think Sephardi women do. I'm not 100% sure, but Sephardi women might actually recline because they don't rely on the Raviyah. They hold that their Mishnah is establishing an absolute requirement that everyone has to recline. It's not that the Mishnah is just telling us you have to eat in a normal fashion. Some people do, although it's a good lesson, even if we might technically hold like the Raviyah, it's a good way. We try and during the Seder to get people to ask questions, get the kids to ask questions, especially. So if you're bringing out the pillows and you're leaning and you're doing a remembrance of the way they used to eat in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, it's at least a good teaching experience, if not strictly required by some many poskim. The Yeser Prateha, the rest of Yeser Hapratim, the rest of the details of this mitzvah, Mivorim Besof Sachim, in the last parak of Sachim, which discusses the halachos of the Seder and the Arbakosos and Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Menuheges Bizcharim Munikevos, the requirement for both men and women, Bechol Makom, Bechol Zman, in all places, in all times, even when there's not Korban Pesach, for example, even when there's not a Beis HaMikdash, Veover Aleha Bitel Asay, if you violated this mitzvah and you did not perform a Seder on Pesach, you have neglected to perform a positive commandment, and of course there's no penalty associated with that, but it's still considered a very unideal thing to do.